for downloading this episode of Snacks for the Brain. We're truly grateful for your interest in what we're doing to bring the joy of research and discovery to K-12 students and teachers the whole world over. Bi-weekly or so, we'll share some fun, independent, pod-safe music. We'll interview some working research scientists, students, or leading proponents of educational change, and we'll toss in an educational sound-seeing tour or computer tip.
Can't miss it for you. We'll be right here.
At blogs.vanderbilt.edu/S4TheB and at the CSO website at scienceoutreach.org, sharing good brain munchies with you. So listen up. Let's get right down to it with episode number
80
of Snacks for the Brain.
Snacks for the Brain.
So, I don't know how this has moved anybody or completely confused anybody, but I am grateful for the chance to share some of the value that I see in this. And I really don't think I'm obsessed with it, but I'm very passionate about it. I'm more obsessed with my lacrosse player son. And I'd often rather be fishing, but this is, I think, kind of important work. So that's it.
Hello, Snackies! At the request of my wonderful Center for Science Outreach Director, Dr. Virginia Shepherd, and with the blessing of School for Science and Math Director, Dr. Glenn McCombs, a dozen or so staff and faculty from both institutions gathered for an hour in the school's classroom last Friday on the Vanderbilt campus to witness my best shot at explaining why I think Second Life, and by extension virtual worlds, have a great deal to offer for teaching and learning. I started off by welcoming the assembled and introducing a guest, digital collections archivist at the Vanderbilt University Library and archivist for its Discover Archive, Ronnie Francis. Then I proceeded, a bit unconventionally, no, not me, by viewing most of the 10-minute ISTE in Second Life video that describes how that 85,000-member International Society for Technology and Education built a virtual community inside the 3D platform of Second Life, after which I launched into my PowerPoint presentation. True to Murphy's Law, I failed to hit record on my little Olympus voice recorder until we were discussing the Peggy Sheehy slide. So I will append this dialogue to the beginning of my very first slidecast at slideshare.net. This will be a long one, so take from it what you will, and my hope is that it remains as a resource for innovative educators for a good while to come. I'll also be glad to travel with this show, or one like it, upon delivery of a suitcase full of $100 bills. Just kidding. Okay, if you want the full experience, visit the link to the ISTE video in the episode 80 blog post at blogs.vanderbilt.edu/S4TheB and watch it, then pop on into the slidecast at slideshare.net/ScottMerrick. Settle back with a bowl of popcorn and let the cast cast its spell.
The Lost Narration.
I believe that there are two kinds of people. One, the kind who say that there are two kinds of people, and two, the others. I hope that I am in set number two. That said, I have in recent years noticed a clear dichotomy in the world between people who readily latch on to the value and potentials of online virtual worlds and those who pretty much refuse to entertain the possibilities. There is also, thankfully, a broad spectrum in between those two camps. Hopefully, sharing this with you will help you start to sort things out for yourself. There is more text in this presentation than I would like there to be, but I include it because it's important. Please feel free to multitask as you will by reading as I am blabbering. I will not be reading it aloud to you. First, what is Second Life anyway? The official line from the official webpage is worth a read. Reads sort of commercially. And I guess I will read these aloud since I'm recording audio for the podcast. Officially, Second Life is a free online virtual world imagined and created by its residents. From the moment you enter Second Life, you'll discover a fast-growing digital world filled with people, entertainment, experiences, and opportunity. The link for that is http whack/secondlife.com, whack what is. This is a sort of a commercially line, but it's also something that is quite true. And the important operative phrases here are imagined and created, because it's full of creation. It's what it's all about. Here's an unofficial line from Dana Gardner, ZDNet, and the slidecast, the title here is truncated, and that's unfortunate because the whole quote is, "What makes Second Life eerily powerful is the zero distance between the thinker and the technology." And I'm just going to read this really quickly for my podcast listeners. "It took about an hour before I finally switched from thinking that my initial experiences with Second Life were a waste of time to actually finding them being productive in new ways. What was different is that I was a virtual arm's length from some heavy-hitting IBM talent and leadership, and I was able to communicate with them and learn from them quite well. That is not always the case in the real world, where crowds, noise, location, and competition can get in the way. There is an egalitarian equalizing effect when your avatar IMs with another, even if you know who they are. There's a comfort level with being virtual, and the IBMers seem eager to chat with lots of folks. I can see getting better access to executives and the creative minds at IBM in Second Life than I do in real life, and that's a good thing." So this was Dana Gardner in 2006 at a meeting where IBM executives were sharing virtual world, in this case Second Life. I share that because of his unique perspective, that it's a networking tool.
And this just came out last week, so I wanted to share that. There's a really groovy, this PowerPoint is on SlideShare. If you just go to slideshare.com and search for me, you'll find it. And these links work. This link for the next book is a really groovy sort of page-turner version of the magazine. And you see all the images in the rest of her article. So what are we doing in Second Life? Well, we're extending our 2D web presence into three dimensions. And what that means is something like this. Just as an example, this is our building in Second Life, which we'll see. With any luck, we'll go into Second Life in a little bit. And I created this three-dimensional version of our logo. And it took me about 15 minutes to make it. I basically upload textures, which are images, and apply them to shapes that you very easily create in Second Life. A little quote that Glenn shared in the email, the most populated user-generated content on the Internet, is really true. If you ever look for the creator of Second Life, is Philip Rosedale, who was a
chief technology officer
of Real Networks, who did the Real Player, and left that position and started this company. There are books about how this thing started. The Making of Second Life is a really good book, by the way. So it's all about creation in his mind. We're engaging in dialogue with the international community. I think the movie made that fairly clear. Jenny Shepherd, our esteemed and innovative educator herself, suggested that we create a program in Second Life, and I'm about to get this underway. It's been in design, but what I'll basically do is to send out over my fairly extensive educator networks calls for science educators who'd like to come and watch a movie together and chat about it while it goes on. So it's come to be imaged in my mind as kind of a mystery science theater for real science education. In all these presentations I've been to in Second Life, one of the most valuable features is the back chat. Yeah, and so there was an article in Learning and Leading with Technology last month that was themed around the concept of on-task distraction. And it was some educators who are using Google Documents in their classrooms while they're teaching and encouraging their students to jot down comments. They're all sharing the same Google document. Jot down comments. Surf the Internet and look for relevant links, add images so that by the end of a lecture in his class, they have a relevant recording of questions the kids have and input the kids have actively gone out to look for. So I like that term, on-task distraction. So we're going to create some of that with CSO Talk Talks, starting with some of the TED Talks. Anybody see the Bill Gates TED Talk? You guys know about TED Talks? Really valuable stuff, and lots of them on science. And I might even start with the Gates one. It's a long one, but it was a good talk. I like the touch of releasing the mosquitoes into the audience. No reason developing nations, people in developing nations should be the only ones to enjoy that. We're establishing name recognition and enhancing reputation for innovative effective practice. This is just a snapshot. Actually, it's a snapshot of Kevin Jarrett's blog, and you can't see it on this image, but I'm back there in the background doing a presentation in San Antonio for an informal presentation. It's just at a gathering cafe. And sitting next to me, though, is the education director from Linden Lab, Claudia Lamaro, who goes by Claudia Linden. All the people who work for Linden Lab have the last name Linden in Second Life. So if you bump into one while you're traveling, pick their brain. Interesting aside, one of the Lindens is a former Vanderbilt professor, Rod Knopp. Anybody remember him? I ran into him at the Second Life Education Conference in Tampa, and he had done a video conference presentation for me from the Dyer series years ago. It was a fascinating presentation. I don't know if you remember the thing. His presentation was, how big is the universe? And he did a really good job. And he's currently holding regular presentations in Second Life as Prospero Linden. And I think his technical job is really working on the databases for him.
Did you ever hear back from him, Scott? Didn't you contact
him? Yeah, he hadn't gotten back to me, but I'll pound him some more. I'd like to have him there for Talk Talks. A clever little title, CSF Talk Talks. Okay, we're exploring professional development options. The image here is from Jocadia, which is a whole different education network. There are several pockets of educators working on Second Life, and she is kind of not related to ISTE. I mean, she's an ISTE member. But there are several different initiatives going on. This is just one of them. A lot of universities in Second Life. And that speaks to, I've got a few more images I just want to share. Here's our building. I'm sitting on the front porch. I'm going to sign out for Talks Talks with a link to the wiki where people can go and see what the potential videos might be. Here's how we extend the presence of our website, our wonderful website, into Second Life. All these objects are big panels representing pages from the internet website. I'm sure you recognize them. We've got the desk camp here. That's the gas camp. The scientific classroom. Snacks for the Brain, for Health and Distance. Next to it is a podcast pickle player. If you click on any of these, your interior Second Life browser opens, and you go to the web page. And so you can get all the information that the web page holds, not just this page display. You can also set it to open an external browser so you can run Second Life and Firefox or Internet Explorer or something at the same time. And so what it's doing is extending the reach of our 2D our internet website into the 3D internet. And pretty much everything at our website is represented. This is just one wing of the building. So if you click on this podcast pickle player, an external browser opens and you can actually listen to episodes. There's a snag from the CSO Theater. I've got this set. There's a little sign underneath here that says turn on your media settings. You'll see what that does in a minute. But you can actually view the 3-minute PSA video that you guys so beautifully created for the School for Science and Math. And it plays really nicely inside there. I've got a little pod sitting around where people can sit and watch it, and groups can come in. Here's the advertisement for an upcoming conference only in Second Life. Virtual World's Best Practices in Education. And ISTE is only on the peripheries of this one. This is a whole other, they call themselves the Education Community of Second Life. But it's a whole bunch of developers, one of whom is a chief developer for Sloodle, which is the Moodle interface for Second Life, who are creating this big conference. And I'm hoping to establish a presence for CSO there, maybe have a booth where people can come and talk about what we do at CSO and I can share out. My avatar will be sitting there with a cup of coffee or whatever. Okay, so that's that coming up. Those talks that were talked about in the movie, good tracking, Will. The ISTE talks that were every Tuesday night are now every other Tuesday night. The socials are every Thursday, but the Tuesday night things are now being videoed in world by the Second Life Cable Network. ISTE arranged an agreement with them so that they do all the post-production on it, and you know that takes a lot of work, Jeff, to do video post-production on anything. You know how much work that 3-minute video is. There are now 1-hour video archives of every one of these talks that they have. Starting 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, with a three-person panel discussion on virtual campuses in Second Life. And the one this past Tuesday was all about librarians extending social media in Second Life. It's a huge librarian community. The American Library Association and a whole bunch of other organizations are in creating libraries inside Second Life. Where's Andrew? I don't know. You're coming.
I'll get in
there. okay. And I haven't seen this one yet, but because I've been hollering for them to archive these ever since they started, because they're so valuable, the discussions are so stimulating and interesting, and you're sitting in a room full of educators who are doing all kinds of neat back chat about the topics and adding links and resources while it's going on. It's a cool experience. Here's the teleport at the island where you right-click and click select from a pie chart menu and say teleport, and you'll go to these places around the island. If the island, that first shot you saw in the video was a rental, just like ours, at Edu Island. That's how they got started. And then they bought one sim, which you saw in a panorama picture. And now there are 4 sims used for all kinds of educational organizations belonging to ISTE. Over here is my little area, podcaster blogger areas. I maintain 2 little buildings on the ISTE main island relating to podcasting and blogging. And you'll see a picture of that in a minute, I bet. Actually, we'll take you there. Okay, so why should you care? And the main reason you should care is that you're lifelong learners. Everybody in this room cares about learning, not just about teaching, but about learning, too. And that's one thing that keeps us all so young. And we'll continue to keep us that way, because we care about learning. And I've had so many learning experiences in here. That's why I'm passionate about it, because I've had extraordinary learning experiences. Personal Learning Network, all of you have them. They just vary according to their digital nature. You have people you trust, colleagues you trust, that you ask questions of when you have an issue. You call somebody on the telephone. You might email them and ask them their opinion about something you're going to do. That's your personal learning network. That's your support system. And people who are wildly into personal learning networks, like moi perhaps, have a whole bunch of digital tools. Twitter, Skype, you guys use Google Chat, that's part of the personal learning network. What else? Facebook, you know, it depends on how you set up Facebook. If you set it up with 50 educators and technologists and that's your field, or if you set it up with 50 microbiologists, educators, and that's your field, when you have a question, you tweet it out over your Twitter network or over your Facebook network, and you get answers. And what I did the other day was to ask, I said, I'm working on my one shot at explaining to my folks in just 1 hour why they should be interested in Second Life input. I currently have, last time I checked, about 547 people following what I say in 140 character comments. And sometimes it's, I'm on my step machine. But the question, the key question of Twitter is, what are you doing? And if you populate your Twitter contacts with people who are technologists and educators, and you tell them you're working on a PowerPoint or you're working on a project, you get things like this. Dean Groon, because it's more engaging and visually interactive than Illuminate, press the mic button, put your hand up. How many people have used Illuminate for webinars? How many people have been to a webinar, right? Okay, those kind of educational experiences are distance experiences and very valuable, but they're kind of flat, And Dean Groom is an Australian educator. He's actually, his title at his university is Director of Innovative Technology. Why can't I get one of those? I don't know. He's become a friend of mine, and I met him in Second Life, and I met him in real life in Tampa, and he's now going to co-present with me on one of my workshops this summer, and I'm really looking forward to it because he's a very, very smart man. I never would have met without Second Life. Online teacher, who's a teacher in Indiana, a technologist, said something that sounds a little catty, maybe. Let me read it to you. And the people who have drunk the Kool-Aid, which I probably have to say I've drunk the Kool-Aid, because I think that education is changing, and if institutions don't change to deal with that. Anybody see the Professor Spot television commercial? I'm going to find that and play it for you. It's Kaplan University talking about how educational institutions need to change. It's really touching. But basically, it's this theory that you know, kids are learning differently, communication's happening differently, information's being shared differently. The way to balance your life has to adjust, and the tools that you use to learn are different. And I know that's hard. That's a hard skill for a lot of people who've got time in educational institutions. But some institutions are making the move toward leveraging these kind of tools to the benefit. That doesn't mean they're going to tear down their brick and mortar walls. That means they're using the tools at their disposal. Okay, put those away. Reason number two, other universities and organizations are leaving us in the virtual dust. And I'm going to click on this link, and you can click on the others. But I always tell my kids that when you go to a web page, probably going to open behind, didn't it? Here's the video. Are you there? Nope. Come on. Here it comes. When you go to a web page, kids, little kids, you know, they're looking at a web page. The size of the tab over here indicates the size of the viewable page. I don't know if you know that. You might. But however tiny this is, as many of those tabs that will fit in from top to bottom is how many viewable pages you have on a single web page. So that indicates how far you have to scroll to get to the bottom. So if you scroll to get to the bottom of this one, you'll see Cochise College in Arizona. You'll see Harvard University, you'll see Princeton University, and you'll see Hong Kong Polytechnic University, Idaho State, Indiana University.
Is that by virtue of a person there, or are they actually using this in some sort of...
It varies, and that's a very good question. It really varies. Harvard University is teaching classes in Second Life and allowing people to come in and audit the classes without paying tuition. But they've got paying students in there, too. While I'm looking at this, here, let me do this Control-F, V-A-N-D. There we are, Vanderbilt University, Center for Science Outreach. That's us. And now we're kind of running into this pack a little bit. We haven't done a lot, but we've got a foothold there, and we're showing ourselves to be an innovative organization. And hopefully, we will use the tools in ways that make it valuable for us and for learners. Well, let me get back to this thing. That, by the way, that Slurl will open Second Life if you have it on your computer and take you there. Where was I? How about here? Okay. SimTeach is a good. This list, by the way, is a set of links from SimTeach, which is just an organizing website for educators. And last, you know, there's a really long reach for content in here. I've got a visitor counter for our little property. In the first month, there were 12 visitors. Last time I checked, which was last week, there had been 31. And as people talk about things and as events happen on locations, those numbers increase exponentially. And we'll get more visibility for the fine programs that everybody does. You know, I'm not saying you have to jump into Second Life and participate, you know, but if you want to, it's a good way to learn. If you want to let me, you know, be the forward scout, I'll do that. Okay, this is the deal we cut with Kathy Schrock, and Kathy Schrock is... if you say that name to an educational technologist in K-12, you'll see that you see their eyes light up because they've probably heard her speak at a conference. She's really a big voice in education and technology, and has been doing this Discovery Education site for a long time. I got invited to do a workshop in Edison, New Jersey, a whole day workshop a couple years ago, for a summer institute for teachers, and they wanted to learn about video conferencing, so they somehow found me and asked me to go. And it was a two-day workshop, and the other person who was there was Kathy Schrock. So we met and became friends, and you know, now if I walk into a huge conference center conference hall, she'll say, "Merrick, is anything else?" And it's somewhat gratifying. Also, she's just a really smart person. And surrounding yourself with those kind of people is a good thing to do. Okay. On this PowerPoint, it explains that I cast about for, you know, I want to take CSO into Second Life. We want to do it on the budget. Who's got some notions? And she responded, I got three or four responses. And I looked into leasing at Iste Island. And it was fairly pricey. And Kathy said, "Okay, here, I'll give you a building on my island," which she had been using for online professional development for her district in Cape Cod. "You can have it free for the rest of the academic year, and I'll give you a rate on the lease of $300. So we're paid up through 2010 on this island. Excuse me, if you guys want to go and have parties here, you can do that. Or you can go just hang out and check it out. You get a link to the headquarters in Second Life, and it's the Eduverse Talks. I would love to show you one of those, just like I showed you this video at the start, because I've got you captive right now. If I had 2 hours with you, we'd be watching this video, because the post-production on it is really, really good. What they did was they took the PowerPoints that showed up, and they embedded them inside the video, which is, after all, animated video captured with Fraps or something like that. And it looks really, really good. It's a fun, interesting watch.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, ask anything. Let's stop for a second.
So you talked earlier about how in Second Life there's the teen grid, and then there's the adult side of things, and they really don't mesh unless there's, for educators, a background check and all that. So does that mean that the property that you've rented for the CSO is an adult-only place?
Yes, unless a human being is 18 years old, they can't go there. I can look into property on the teen grid and price that out, and we can talk about that and talk about having students in the teen grid if you want.
Well, I mean, because I'm looking at this, you know, obviously from the school side, and the school side to me is all about our students who are primarily under 18.
Absolutely.
So we would need a teen site. I mean, because I can see all kinds of utility for this from the school side in terms of interacting, you know, with our students, and even things that, you know, Glenn has tried to promote in terms of our students interacting with students elsewhere, but clearly we need a place where they can go.
Yeah, we'd have to use the teen grid for that, and I'm well up to looking into that. I dug up my 1996 FBI background check, and I've got it in hand for when I join USM.
I think it's a Glenn question, you know, to really pursue if we want to do that. I don't know cost-wise what it is. I don't know.
It would probably be in the neighborhood of less than a couple of $1,000.
So would that get us a rental site, or would that buy us an island?
That would get us an island.
That we would own?
Yeah. Although there are maintenance fees involved. You know, what I will do for you, it's like property taxes. Because basically, when you buy a sim, they're dedicating a computer to it. So now we've got, what, 10,000 or, you know, computers, each running a home place on it. But I'll cost it out for you and give you some cost figures if you like.
But they're also, I mean, the kids could go on now and go to other.
Yeah. I mean, I can turn them on to Peggy's stuff. She's doing all kinds of very cool stuff with kids. She teaches classes in there, and one of the things that she's done is she's got her teachers, I don't know how she does it, but she's got her teachers all coming up with ways they can use the Second Life Teen Grid in their curriculum. And the health teacher was doing a unit on self-image. And talk about perfect for that. She had kids go in and they watched the Dove commercial, you know, where the model is transformed from a fairly plain looking to a gorgeous drop dead, you know, model-ish, typical beautiful thing. And they talked about that. They talked about that video. And, you know, the first session they had, they went in and they were challenged with making their avatar look as beautiful as possible. And then they broke her out. And then they broke the kids out. And they had discussions on these great objects that are six-seater pods that are not within range, chat range of each other. And she's got it set up so that the chat is all emailed to her. And they had these really moving discussions about it. The second session, they were asked to change their gender and to make that avatar as beautiful as possible. And the third session, they were asked to look like themselves. And after each one, they would have these discussions. She said it just got progressively more moving and deep. And she noticed that leading into the first life, whatever, sorry for the terminology, that's just what it is, leading into real life, as kids who would not have given other kids the time of day were talking to each other in the halls. So it just promotes communication, or that particular use of it does. And, you know, it's only the uses of it are only limited by the creativity of the people who are using it.
So let me ask you another question now.
But they wouldn't have any supervision, right?
So
they could go and explore.
So this has, well, I don't know how much it costs. I'm sure it costs.
It's free.
It's free to get your SGI background check.
Oh no. It's not very expensive. It's about $40, something like that.
So
you use a commercial service.
So how do you link? I mean, you go into Second Life and link through and say, I want to get this background check done, so you guys...
Yeah, you have to work with Linden Lab to get in there. And then what they do is they create you another avatar, and then you can move certain items from your inventory into the team grid, but those are rigorously examined to make sure that there's nothing adult content in it.
Well, what about time? So say they wanted them to go to a university site to... look at a lecture at the Harvard site or something.
Right. Some of the sites are able to mirror content into the team grid. NASA has a wonderful museum of international space flight. Did you see that when you were
there?
Yeah, showed you. Yeah, I'll take them there. That's a standard visit. that every rocket that's ever been built has a model there. And there are all kinds of resources for there. You can actually sit on top of a rocket right into the sky and it's just, you know, it's possible. Let me click my streaming media here. Uh-oh, it's not showing. I must have lost my media. Somebody must have been playing with my YouTube. Ooh, let's do that. So here's the room I was in. I'm going to walk up the steps and be careful not to bump my head. One thing we have up here is a YouTube player, which is pretty cool. And if you click, actually you have to search. There's an information card that tells you exactly what to do. And if you go to to.s education science, let's see what's there. Oops. I got to spell it right. Science. And hit enter. This player will go out and search YouTube for returns that meet the results here. So this is education science. I need to add Second Life to that search term, I think. But let's just look. Backpacking team with best-selling science authors to take high school students on. Weightless flights of discovery. CSU professional science. I wonder, Vanderbilt. What that does. Oops, I didn't do the rest of the thing. /0.s. Click away. Vanderbilt won't work. MD. I want to take you to the American Chemical Society site before we go. I talk fast. We got here, Vanderbilt Center for Science Outreach, enter Second Life. That's a little video I made about this building. First hit, though, author Google Tom Vanderbilt, Sir Paul Nurse, succeeding in science, Snacks for the Rain, and Weird Vocal Science. So you can actually view the videos here. Mouth drops, may help ragweed. Things to know about the Science and Engineering Library. I didn't know they had that there. Do you have any YouTube stuff, Ronnie?
No, we have like all the ice.
Well, that's cool. And you can go through here. It looks like we had 67 results. Let's see what else we have. Me again. Come on. There we go. Surgical lesions correct imbalance in motor circuit and Parkinson's disease. Challenges for drug discovery in a post-genomic world. That's pretty. Oh, the Vanderbilt Star Chamber video. That's pretty cool. So, you know, we can sit around with educators and check out videos. That's kind of cool. Or just go visit. Here's my spinning logo. Pretty cool, huh? And you can change the environment settings so that it's even more dramatic. There we go. Spotlighter. Let me show you this. Inventory. Search American Chemical. There you go. I just discovered this last week. This is not a staple of mine. But I'm compiling a list of valuable science sites, and this came across my radar. Let's look at it in the light of day here. Sunrise is nice. So we better go. I want you guys to be able to see, so we'll go midday. Let there be light. So, I don't know how this has moved anybody or completely confused anybody, but I am grateful for the chance to share some of the value that I see in this. And I really don't think I'm obsessed with it, but I'm very passionate about it. I'm more obsessed with my lacrosse player son. And I'd often rather be fishing, but this is, I think, kind of important work. So that's it.
Hokey dokey, that does it for episode number 80 of Snacks for the Brain. However, what's this? It's a
tech tip tidbit for you.
Today's computer tip of the week comes to you from Dr. T at rtmlac4dds@aol.com. Just go to the show notes page to get that link. If you want to increase or to even decrease the size of the objects on your computer in Windows XP, go to Start, Control Panel, make sure you're in the classic view, and double-click on the Display icon. Next, click on the Settings tab and hit the Advanced button. Under the General tab, you can select which DPI, that's dots per inch, setting you prefer. You can choose from normal size, large size, or you can even make custom size just for you. Once you choose your setting, you will be prompted to restart your computer. When it boots back up, you'll be able to notice the size difference of the objects on your computer. Now, if you also want to change your font size, go back to Start, Control Panel, and click on the Display icon again. From there, click on the Appearance tab, and then use the Font Size drop-down box to choose between Normal, Large, or Extra Large. Then just hit OK and you'll be all set. Your XP computer is now set up just the way you want it. Thanks for joining us for episode number 80 of Snacks for the Brain.
Snacks for the Brain is brought to you by the fine folks at the Vanderbilt Center for Science Outreach, connecting working research scientists with K-12 students worldwide. Check out the website at scienceoutreach.org.
Hey, I'm going to play you out with a really restful little tune from David Modica from his Electric Earth Acoustic Sky CD at magnatune.com. See ya!